Hello and welcome to episode 300 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I'm joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Megan, we'll start with you this week.
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and you can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
Joey?
Hi, I'm Joey Mezzer. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMezzer83.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. So this is 300. We are in the 300 club.
Oh my God.
I was like, maybe we should have done something, but we didn't.
Yeah. Just any other day.
Any other day. You know, no, NBD, 300 podcasts down. Suck it, guys.
Well, congratulations.
Did you just crack open a drink? I heard a soda opening somewhere.
I'm a homosexual.
I apologize.
It's beer.
Beer.
That'd be pretty
funny. Now that I live in Ohio, it's fucking beer.
Swing state, motherfucker.
Oh my God.
Joey, I didn't see any posts from you today about what your Proud Boy picture would be.
Yeah.
I only retweeted one like late last night when I first saw that thing happening. But I mean, I guess I could probably like, I don't know, find something really gay and put it up there. But now I'm seeing all these people that are like, I don't think gay people should associate with white supremacists. I'm like, shut up. Like,
yeah, I saw that too.
We all have to complain about everything.
I do want to tell you that my dad asked what Schadenfreude means, you know, because that is the top trending term right now. And I said, oh, it means the happiness at the misfortune of others. I said, fuck you, lady. That's what stairs are for. And I thought of you.
Thank you. I'm always happy to be associated with that show. Neville, stop. Sorry, I'm yelling at the dog.
Oh, poor Neville.
How's the past week been with the Cargi?
Yeah.
He's fine.
You always say, I'm exhausted, Megan. He was like, I'm so tired.
Like, parenting is a full-time job. Shut up, Neville. He tore something up. Probably, you know. It's probably my voter registration form or something like that.
Oh, my God. Yes, you won't be able to register to vote because the dog ate your voter registration form.
Yeah.
Well, in honor of our 300th podcast, we're doing absolutely nothing. No, we are. we've had a couple of really packed and busy podcasts with different members of the talking about Emmys and Emmy and what's coming up in the fall. We're just going to pause for a minute and talk about some of the things that we've seen and done and opinions we've made over the last 6 weeks. And that does include our, how do I want to say this? Our informed TV watcher opinion of the first presidential debate, which I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but that feels like with every news daily news cycle feeling like a month or a year, like that first debate feels like it was months ago.
Well, even his taxes.
I know. His taxes
that
a week ago
was a
today.
Week ago, and that's like buried now.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Well, I will say about the taxes, you know, of course, you know, I guess we're getting a little bit political now, but nothing in that report was surprising to me. Like,
no,
I mean, we all knew what was in there.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not it's we don't have the actual forms, but we knew he wasn't paying taxes. Right. I mean, he basically admitted to that during the 2016 presidential debates.
Well, they've always been in an audit. So.
You know, yes.
Take that with what you will.
The perpetual audit.
Yes.
They're really complicated. Mm. Really not.
So, yeah. So we're going to talk about about the presidential debate, and we're going to talk about all of the films and television shows we've caught up to over the past, I guess it feels like 6 weeks, because I'm using sort of Mulan as our bellwether there, as our kickstart, because I think that's the first thing that sort of came out for the fall season that we didn't end up talking about on the podcast, but I know that we've all seen. So start with that. So yeah, that's what we're doing to celebrate our 300th podcast. Just the three of us sitting around chit-chatting.
Yeah.
Just a couple bitches talking about stuff.
Where do we want to start? Do you want to start with the politics, or do you want to start with
let's get that out of the way.
Okay. So last Tuesday night.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Keeping it.
No. It's fine. Last Tuesday night was the first of reportedly three televised debates between President Donald Trump and Vice President Joe Biden. And I was really looking forward to it until it started. And then once it started, it was really rough. And I made it through the whole thing. But it was, I can I can honestly say, I'm not even going to say that. Sorry, I'm really out of it tonight. I can honestly say it is probably the worst debate I have ever seen since, you know, I've been watching these things. And I usually watch all of them. I've watched all of them probably since the early 2000s. The worst one I've ever seen, by far, hands down. Like, just like I don't remember who it was. I think it was Jake Tapper or maybe somebody on ABC. It was a dirty diaper wrapped up inside a dumpster fire or something like that.
Yes.
It was an apt.
It was embarrassing. I just thought it was mostly embarrassing. Like, I just kept thinking if you were an alien that you just landed here and were like, what is this? Like, or even if you're somebody from not from America, not from the United States, and you just moved here, or yeah, right, like you just moved here. But if you saw this, or even just people around the world saw this, it's like, oh my God, like we just don't have our shit together. It just seemed like that. And I thought that Joe Biden did a good job for the most part, because I don't know how I would have handled somebody interrupting me constantly. Like, and even it was confusing at points. And, you know, they complain about The View, that the women just talk. I mean, they do talk over each other when I used to watch. But this was just two guys talking over each other. And it sounded like there were more than two people in the room. Well, there was little turtle Chris Wallace, but he wasn't really doing much of anything.
Right.
Poor Chris.
Yes. Well, I think that was part of the problem where, you know, Trump obviously came in with an idea that he was going to use a scorched earth policy to try to rattle Biden and to make him look old and out of it and senile and all the things that they've been saying about him that are not true, that he has dementia and all of this stuff. That he was trying to do that. I mean, he didn't prepare, per his own words, because he was too busy running the country. He wasn't there to debate substantial policies or ideas. He was there to make fun, to poke, to prod. And he ended up debating not only Biden, but also the moderator.
Yes, which Dan Rather said that too. He's like, I've never seen like somebody debate the moderator before.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty sad statement.
I mean, Joey, let me pose a question to you first, and then Megan, you can answer it too. Taking politics out of it, taking, you know, the fact that this is a presidential election, you know, coming up in a month, was it good television?
No. I felt like I would probably think that it was maybe something you can hate watch, because, like, I started the debate late because I was watching something else, and I got into the debate like 45 minutes in, and by the time that I was wrapping up the thing I was watching, I was scrolling through Twitter and I saw the stuff that like Sasha was saying and like Megan was saying and what everyone was saying. And I was like, oh my God. But like, I saw like 10 minutes in, someone's like, okay, this is going to be a horrible 90 minutes. This is such a shit show. I was like, okay. But I feel like, And, you know, some people were saying, like, you already know who you're going to vote for. Why would you watch the debates? I was like, I feel like maybe it's, you know, sort of essential to watch them. But I actually heard somewhere that Chris Christie, I mean, I might be wrong, but I think I read somewhere that said Chris Christie was the one who told Trump that he needs to interrupt him as much as possible because people who stutter have a really hard time coming back when they are interrupted. So I was like, oh, okay, we're just horrible. Okay, that's fine. Don't you remember when there was like, I'm looking forward to the next presidential debate because I assume, you know, as much as I want to see Kamala Harris spank Mike Pence on the ass, like, or across the face, whatever, it's her choice. I feel like that's going to be more like an actual debate. Like,
yeah,
it's going to be two people standing at their stupid little podiums. You know, no one ever stays within the minute mark. But I mean, like, you know, the points will, I hope, be made.
Well, I have thoughts on that, too, that I'd like to get to. But first, I want to give you some time to answer. I'm feeling like a debate moderator now. I want to give you some time, Megan. Yes, 2 minutes to answer that
question. I didn't do that. No, she's wrong. Don't let her answer.
I would say I should have just interrupted Joey the entire time. I do think it was good television only because, you know, the hell they say, you know, it's like bad news is, any bad news is good news. Any news is, you know, I don't know, kind of, it was entertaining to me, even though I was on the edge of my seat because, I mean, entertaining in a way of like, you couldn't look away. I mean, it wasn't boring. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what was going to happen. If we're judging television by that and its unpredictability, then it definitely, you know, achieved that. But, I mean, it's not a good debate. It wasn't like, it's like I said, it was embarrassing, yeah. But I have never watched something and been so nervous watching it. Like, I've just was, my heart was beating so fast. I'm like, I'm not going to sleep tonight. I'm so upset. Like, about a debate.
Yeah, yeah, it took me a long time to go to bed just because, you know, the adrenaline, the anger, just the frustration that, you know, and maybe this was I've never been belonged to a debate club. I've never been in a debate, so I can't say. Maybe this is some kind of strategy where you just rattle your opponent so much that they can't possibly, you know, if I know some people were criticizing Biden for not sticking to, you know, the policies or talking about his platform. People were criticizing him for telling him to shut up or calling him a clown. You know, I think Trump put him in a position where he was damned if you do and damned if you don't. I mean, if he didn't sort of respond and acknowledge how clownish Trump was acting, then he would have been seen as weak and sleepy Joe. So bring himself down to that level, I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think that he's just can't do anything. And then I saw some conservative friends, I should say, saying that they were offended that he called Trump a clown, that it's disrespectful, which I just think is funny because Trump has never been respectful to anybody, like, ever.
I think it's really insane when you see people that are so hung up on, like, you know, the, how dare, he's the president.
Yeah, like, I know.
He's an asshole.
Yeah.
You know, they're hung up on, like, hate to quote American Horror Story cult, but people in America love their symbols.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like the most disrespectful person I've ever seen in fiction, nonfiction, real life, from a distance on television. Like, he's a piece of garbage.
he is what was elected. He is a person who was primarily successful in self-promotion and a reality TV show host. And that is what he has made the office of the President of the United States. And that is what he made that debate, a reality show conversation in all aspects.
It was like the craziest Real Housewives. I don't watch Real Housewives. So I mean, like, the craziest, like, reunion of anything. I just want them to, and I think this is a Real Housewives thing. I guess Kevin will tell me when he listens to the podcast, if I'm right or wrong, because I know he's a very devout Housewives fan, maybe, or Jordan can too. Like, I think and I think everyone can agree with this, that they just need to, they need to cut the mics off. They need to, like, is, mute each other or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is what they said they were going to do with the second debate. Now, we'll have to see what shape, if the second debate takes place, we'll have to see what shape it takes. I certainly, if I were Joe Biden, I would not want to be in the same room with somebody who knowingly had a massively contagious virus and deliberately showed up late to the debate to avoid getting tested. To avoid
the honor system, Clarence.
Yeah, it was the honor system. Yeah, well, I mean, we see how that goes. Anyway, so I just wanted to stay focused on the debate itself. The one thing that I would say coming up about the VP debate, and I'm very interested in both of your perspectives on this, I almost think Kamala Harris can't win that debate. And the reason is, if you remember when she was debating in the primary, when she brought points and when she started to become more prosecutorial, she was angry black woman. And I feel like Pence is going to bring that. I don't know why you're getting so angry. I'm just a simple man. Yes, exactly. He's going to be very bland. She's going to come off, gloves off, and I'm hoping it doesn't. I'm hoping they stick to policy. I would love to just have a specific policy debate. I'm hoping that she doesn't end up attacking him like so many people on Twitter are looking for her to do.
I think she'll I think what she will probably do, and I think that she does well, is she hammers home the fact that the current administration isn't doing their job. And I think that she will be able to clearly say this without being interrupted, maybe because he's like scared of her. You know, I can't speak to another woman. But
mother,
where's mother?
Yeah. I was going to say, is she going to be on the stage? Like, how's that going to work?
But I think that she is going to be able to hit home that she and the president have not been able to protect the people of the country. I mean, they can't protect the administration because everyone is getting tested. And a lot of people are going to the hospitals. Thank God. Thank God they can go to the hospitals and people are turned away when they don't have any symptoms. Thank God. When, that's a whole other conversation. But I mean, I think that she is going to be able to, I think her poise and her intellect will come through just fine.
I hope so.
Yeah. Ugh, I love her.
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
It was a great selection. I mean, I would have, you know, obviously we're all liberal people, but I would have voted for him anyway. But I mean, I'm not even gonna say it solidifies my vote, but it just gives me such joy to be able to vote for that ticket.
Yeah,
so excited.
All right, well, that vice president debate comes out Wednesday night. I think it's in Utah, so I think it's a little bit, well, no, it's, I think it's still at 9 p.m. Eastern. Is that right? I think it is.
That's at least 4 hours past Mike Pence's bedtime, so I hope he's ready.
I feel like since they're in Mormon country, I feel like they're kind of like on unfair ground for, I don't know. I know Pence is not Mormon, but I don't know. He's probably into that stuff.
I don't mean
not into the multiple partners thing, but just, you know, controlling people and all that shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I just am scrolling. I just have Twitter up on my laptop while we're sitting here talking, and I see the headline: Trump told advisors on Sunday that he was getting bored being in the hospital, he was tired of watching coverage of his own hospitalization. So an infectious Trump briefly leaves the hospital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did not know this.
Yeah,
we didn't know that.
You didn't know?
No.
This? Yeah, he went.
I haven't been. Oh, good, good, great, good, awesome.
Yeah, he sealed himself up in the presidential limousine or SUV or whatever you want to call it, which is hermetically sealed to avoid a chemical attack, and put all of those Secret Service agents that were driving and sitting and protecting him at risk for COVID in a hermetically sealed environment with somebody who is, let's just say, suffering from the disease to some degree. I don't know. You know, obviously, that's the frustrating thing. If you've been following the news at all over the past 2 days, nobody knows exactly how bad he has it. You hear inside sources, quote unquote, which is frustrating. say that he's really bad off, and then they're looking at, you know, but then you have this doctor who is an epidemiologist come out and talk about what kind of drugs he's on, and then talk about the timeline and give all kinds of little bits and pieces of information. Then you've got Mark Meadows giving his, you know, saying it's really bad, it's much worse than the doctor's telling you, and it's just all chaos. It's just all chaos.
It is.
I'm just sort of ready for it to be over. Anyway, so let's, enough about politics. Let's go talk about television and film, something that brings us joy. How about that?
Sure.
All right, let's start with Mulan, which is, I know some people may think that that's yesterday's news because it premiered in early September on Disney Plus, but a lot of people didn't pay for it, and they're not going to see it until it goes out for free, I think sometime in December. So, yeah, we'll talk about Mulan. So, Megan, why don't you tell us about Mulan?
Well, so I had never seen the original. I don't know if I should admit that, but I just did. Oh, really? That's funny. But it's, you know, it's about this young woman who, in order to, you know, there's a war going on, and in order to defend, it's supposed to be men from each family that go in, into the army, but because her dad is older and, you know, he's weaker, she decides to sacrifice herself and go in, and she's pretending to be male in order to be in the army. So, you know, if they Americanized this, it would probably be with Goldie Hawn and would be awful. But I really enjoyed it. I guess having been not familiar with the original, I just liked the storyline. I thought it was really good. I thought that the acting was good. I thought it didn't need any kind of music, even though I liked the little touches of the reflection song that were all through the film. But I thought Nikki Caro did a really good job directing it. And I know, Clarence, you had said you didn't like some parts like that were a little like silly, like in the beginning when the dishes fall and she like catches them all. But I guess, yeah. I liked how they made it cartoony without it. It had its own little flourish. It wasn't like that. That was like probably one of the most cartoony moments. But it was. I still enjoyed it. I like that it was trying to be visually stunning and visually like a cartoon, like an animated film, but still keeping with the live action. Tradition. I liked it probably of all the. I mean, I've only seen Beauty and the Beast. I think I liked it better than Beauty and the Beast. So, but maybe that's because I don't know. Maybe I just didn't. I had seen the original Beauty and the Beast, so I don't know if that makes a difference. But, yeah, that's what I thought of Mulan.
Joey, what about you?
I liked it a lot. I thought it was. I just thought it was a really entertaining movie. Like, I got a little annoyed when I first started watching it. People were just like, and again, sorry to the people that were mainly complaining about it, were straight dudes who probably wouldn't have liked it if they saw it in the theater, not in the theater, whatever. I was obsessed with the costumes. Like, I was, you know, being obnoxious about how much I loved the costume for a while. I had, I interviewed the costumer, like, as soon as that became an opportunity, I was like, they're mine, I'm talking to her. But I guess maybe the thing that because I'd never seen the original either, I don't have, like, the, you know, huge emotional connection to it. I have a lot of friends that are hardcore Disney fans who usually like every single fucking thing from the Mouse House, but they did not like this one as much. And I guess maybe giving her sort of, I don't want to say special powers, but I mean, I guess the abilities that she is born with is a little bit different than her, like, you know, fighting for herself in, like, just a practical way. That's a little different. I thought the sort of foil that they created with Gong Li was really, really interesting. You know, both women are trapped. They're both birds in a cage, and one can get out, and one cannot. Blah blah blah. But yeah, I liked it. I thought it was entertaining. I think people are getting a little too harsh on it. But yeah,
I agree, and I think it's an important introduction into the Disney live action canon, because it is, you know, we're talking about recently the Academy changing their rules to have a more diverse and inclusive production be eligible for Oscars. I mean, this is a perfect example of what big studios should be doing. So it's the one of the first women to be handed something that large, in terms of a box of of budget. I think it's $200 million movie, a 175, something like that. You've got a female cinematographer, you've got women, you know, working behind the scenes, Asian, Caucasian, all kinds of different perspectives. And you know, at times it does come across as a little overstudied or a little too reverent. But I think ultimately it is a very fun movie, and it is gorgeously filmed, gorgeously made. The production design, the costumes, as you've said, Joey, cinematography. I think the cinematography is just absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
All of those aspects. And it is a very good movie, and it is one that my family really loved, all of them. So,
yeah. And I think it's also like a movie that's come out and I guess more people will be able to do this when they finally get to watch it if they didn't pay for it. Like, it's like a good, entertaining, fun, satisfying, I don't say rousing, but I mean, like, I can see how, little kids would be, like, really sort of uplifted by that story. And I was like, I'll take that over anything, cynical right now at all.
Yeah, I agree. So in terms of Oscar potential, I would say Below the Line.
Yeah, I would say that too. I mean, especially since there's controversy around a lot of people are kind of against the film. I would say that would, yeah, just Below the Line stuff.
I also think the sound. I noticed when they were, and particularly the sequence where they're the montage of them training, the sound of the swords was really crisp and very well done. I don't know why it just resonated so much with me. I just noticed it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Mulan, we all recommend it. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
And so it'll be available broadly to people who don't have or didn't pay $30 for it, or $20. Was it 20?
It was $29. Yeah,
that's a lot. But
yeah.
I wonder what they're going to end up doing with Soul, particularly since theaters now seem to be closing again, and the Bond movie moved out of November into spring of 2021. So I wonder if they're going to keep. I can't see a scenario where they keep Soul in theaters. I imagine Soul will probably premiere on Disney Plus in a similar fashion.
You mean you're talking about no time to release? That's.
Yeah. All right. I think we've talked about this next title that was on my mind, and then I'll turn it over to you guys to talk about other things that you would like. But we briefly talked about, maybe more than briefly, we talked about I'm Thinking of Ending Things, right?
I don't know if we did. Did we?
I don't know.
Oh. Okay. Well, let's revisit that one, or let's visit that one for the first time. Joey, why don't you tell us about Kick It Off, please?
All right, so I'm Thinking of Ending Things is the newest Charlie Kaufman movie. It stars Jesse Plemons and Jesse Buckley and Toni Collette and David Thewlis. It, on the surface, just looks like a young woman traveling with her boyfriend to visit her boyfriend or meet her boyfriend's parents for the first time. As it's sort of weird to sort of explain what this movie is about because there's like so much shit happening in it. It's on the way there, she's sort of contemplating, you know, the feelings that she had for him, whether maybe she's going to break up with him. Like, she has this internal monologue where she's just like, I'm thinking of ending things. And she gets to the parents' house, and it's really, really weird. Like, the time doesn't seem to be constrained by anything. Like, the parents keep getting older, and every time, like, Jesse keeps leaving the room and coming back in, like, they look different. Jesse Buckley's character doesn't really have a name. Her name keeps changing. Her profession keeps changing. I mean, it's sort of just like a meditation on time and loneliness and regrets. And it came out in, like, early September. And while I didn't really enjoy the time that I spent with this movie, I had a really frustrating experience watching it. I have to admit, though, that a lot of it has stuck with me, like the imagery. The music, I think, is really, really beautiful. There's like a 9-minute ballet towards the end, which both made me be like, okay. And then also I sort of loved it because it felt like a throwback to like a 1950s musical. Like his parents live in Oklahoma, the musical, the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical is referenced throughout the movie. So sort of like, it's just sort of like a mashup of everything. So, but while I can't say that I didn't really like it when I watched it, it definitely stuck with me since I've seen it like a month later. I'm not sure if that's good or bad.
No, I mean, I agree with the positive things that you point out. The music is very good and the production design is really interesting, particularly as if you go back and watch it with, I did not watch it. I only watched it once, but I had read the book, so I knew what was going on. I mean, it's a different tone than the book, but the plot is very similar. So I was watching for things in the background, and they definitely tell the story in the production design. It's really compelling the way that they do that. But I guess my reaction to it is it was very unpleasant to watch because I feel like you're just wallowing in self-pity in what I assume to be. And maybe I'm making a huge assumption, but it's almost like Charlie Kaufman's self-pity for not being able to have a girlfriend. It's very uncomfortable. It's very unpleasant. I'm just not sure it beyond that. I don't think it just doesn't tell a compelling story to me. It's very creepy, but then it tries to be all romanticized at the end. And the novel itself is written as sort of a thriller or a horror novel. I felt like Charlie Kaufman just liked the idea, but just couldn't settle on an aesthetic that merged with his well enough. I also think it's a pretty good example of a screenwriter who probably shouldn't direct his own material, because I think the best Charlie Kaufman thing that we've seen has been directed by Michael Gondry. So, you know, they work out things, they know when to push things, you know, a little farther and when to rein things in. And I think this film would have benefited from reining something in a little bit. It's like a writer so much in love with his own words that he can't sort of see what the finished product should be.
I feel like I like this movie in a different version of it. Like, because I was kind of into it in the beginning, and I it did keep me, like, entertained. But then, like, it's slow moving, obviously. I don't understand the ending, and Jalal said that did he reveal to us what the ending is supposed to mean? Because I didn't take it that way, and I didn't know if you knew what the ending was supposed to mean.
Me?
Yeah, or anybody in general, either one of you.
Yeah, so
that's what I can't remember.
Yeah.
So spoiler alert, right? So if you don't want to know the ending or an interpretation of the ending, maybe it is up to interpretation. Maybe this is just my perspective, but she, you know, the character
that's right. Now I remember.
Jesse Buckley plays is not a real character. This is all imagined in his mind as he, you know, looks back on his life essentially. As an older janitor, there are scenes in there that are interspersed where you see an old man serving as a janitor in a school. And it's like he's looking back on his life and he is imagining a life that might have been had he had the courage to ask this girl out.
Ugh, then fuck that. Like, Jesus, I need to see another version of how a man doesn't have the balls to ask a woman out. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
it's kind of incel-y.
Yeah.
A little bit, like. I don't know, because he's kind of, I mean, I took him as, she gets stuck in this abusive relationship with him because he's definitely fucked up, which is proven in that Tulsi Town ice cream parlor scene, where if we're supposed to take it that he's just awkward, that does not come off at all. He comes off as a stalker and comes off as someone who is dangerous, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, I will say this is definitely how the book is, and I assume that I haven't seen anything in the film to dissuade me that he has made her a flesh and blood person. But in the book, even that scene, I mean, it is an entertaining scene. It's a good scene. I just don't know what it means in the general scheme of things if she is not real.
Right. And if the girl says to her, get out of this relationship, like, you know, you need to leave. That's why I thought that what happens is she gets stuck in this relationship, even though she's thinking of ending things. And at the end is him, you know, I don't know. I didn't quite understand the ending with him on stage accepting the janitor award or whatever. But she's in the audience. So that it made it seem like that she was still a part of his life and happy. Like, I don't know. What are you laughing at, janitor award? What did he get? I don't even remember. What did he get?
I don't know. But by the time we got to that ballet and then the musical number that follows it, I was completely checked out of it.
I don't understand what's going on. Yeah. I'm thinking of ending things, but myself.
But you know, a lot of people, you know, it was funny because I'd seen it, and then the reviews came out, and a lot of online presence, like Jazz or Clayton Davis, now Variety, just completely raved about it and talked about, you know, can Jesse Buckley get nominated? Can Jesse Plemons get nominated? Is he a frontrunner for screenplay? And I'm just like, I don't think the Academy is going to look twice at this.
No. I do think Jesse Buckley's narration is exceptional in this film.
Yes.
Yeah, I really like that.
Well, she's a great, great actress. Yeah. She's the best thing by far in most things she's in.
Yeah.
And I hear she's tremendous in Fargo.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Have you guys seen Wild Rose?
No, but I know you love that movie.
She's so good in it.
Yeah. But this one didn't work for me. But we'll see. You know, I don't think Netflix is going to try to push this or bring this back, considering they have 85 movies between now and then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think they'd stand a better shot with something like Defy Bloods, honestly.
Yeah.
And they've got Chicago 7 opening in 2 weeks, I think. And then Mank toward the end of the month. Anyway, all right. So I will turn this over to either you, Megan, or you, Joey, to talk about things that you've seen. Those were two things that were definitely on the front of my mind, just to kind of recap and catch back up to. But what else have you guys been watching? I know, Megan, you've had a really busy month, so you probably haven't been watching a whole lot.
No, but I did make time for South Park, the pandemic special this week. I didn't watch it in real time, but I watched it the next day, and I thought it was pretty funny. It's just an hour-long special about, you know, things that we're dealing with. But suffice it to say, you know, the kids start going back to school, and the cops are now running the school because the teachers are afraid to go back. So the cops all don't have jobs right now because they've been defunded. So that's why they are the teachers. And I won't spoil too much, but, you know, there's a shooting. And also they reveal that how COVID started, which is pretty hilarious, I thought. But it was really good. And then I still need to finish the end of Double Shot at Love in Vegas. I kept trying to watch it on the weekend, but every time my mom would kept calling me and I'd stop it. And then when the on-demand would restart it. So I've watched the same 45 minutes. I just need to see the last 15 minutes of it. and I have to restart from the beginning because it won't let you fast forward. So that's been frustrating. But and then I just started watching Eternal Beauty, the new film with directed and written by, I think, Craig Roberts, and starring Sally Hawkins, which is about schizophrenia. And it's so far, it's just Sally Hawkins is just this fragile eternal beauty that I love. And I just love her. So I'm working on that, watching that right now, but I have been pretty busy. But yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Nice.
Joey, are you going to talk about Ratched?
Oh my God, I'm going to kill someone.
Ratched.
Wretched.
Well, just generally, I've been trying to catch up with, I've been watching a lot of gay shit. because I still do a little bit of program writing for the film festival in Rochester. It's called Image Out. It starts on October 8th. So if you're in New York State and want to watch some gay stuff, you can do that. There's a movie that I watched that is, I wouldn't even necessarily say that it was it's not like going to be up for awards or anything, but it's just a really entertaining film. It's called Stage Mother. It stars Jackie Weaver as this, conservative woman from the South whose son, who is a drag queen, dies from an overdose. And she's like a choir mistress. She's a choir director. So she inherits her late son's drag club in San Francisco. It's just a really fun, heartwarming movie. It stars Jackie Weaver, Lucy Liu, Adrian Grenier. It's a fun movie. Everyone can hear me incessantly talk about Boys in the Band, which I'm obsessed with. Everyone should read my review, or you can listen to. I guessed it on Next Best Picture. They talked about it. That episode is live now.
That's great.
Yeah. And then for TV wise, I binged a couple of shows. I'm completely caught up on The Vow. I am obsessed.
Yes, Clarence, I've been watching that too. I forgot to mention
Clarence,
that. Yes.
You need to watch that. I feel like we should do an episode of The Vow an episode on The Vow since the Emmy season is pretty much over. And then we can bring Jordan on it, whoever else on the team watches it, because it is one of the most fascinating things I've seen in a long time. Because if you watch these people, it's they know they're in a cult, right? They know they're in a sex cult. No, they don't. Okay, great. Okay, awesome. It's really, really, it's really entertaining and really, it's really scary. It's a really scary show. So I watched that. I watched all of the new season of Pen 15, which I will be talking about all season, so I won't take up too much air on it, but it is so good. The moms really stick out in the second season, I feel like. The moms are really, really great. And then I binged all of Emily in Paris. I binged all of Ratched. And then today, I watched Don't Fuck with Cats, which I don't know if either of you have watched that. It is
that
you
the
think
documentary?
It's about it's three episodes. It's three hour long episodes. It won an Emmy for something, editing or something like that. I can't remember, but you think it starts off as these people with a Facebook group, trying to find this person who tortures and kills animals, kills kittens, essentially. He puts these videos online of, the first video they see is he puts two kittens in a vacuum seal bag and suffocates them.
Ugh.
It is, luckily, thankfully, they don't show anything, that you don't hear anything, but he does a couple other videos, and it snowballs into this, hunt for a potential serial killer, around the world. It is so...
Wow.
I watched it in one sitting. It's so good. And I know people were talking about it a lot. But I echo everything they say because it's just really, really good. And then I will say, if we can go back to Ratched for a second.
Please.
Number one, this is a drama series?
Yes.
How? That's all I'm saying. number two...
Because there's a second season? I mean,
the story's just going to be about Do you know if they filmed the second season already?
I think they filmed it all at once.
Oh, okay.
I just think... you're saying how can it proceed through a second season? Like, what is the
like,
crux
it's
of
going
it?
To be, yeah, I think... I mean, it's 8 episodes, the first season. It could have been 6. And I don't know how you're going to fill another season with that. First of all, you kill off one of the most entertaining people on the show, who she knows what she's doing. She knows that it's camp, and she's having a great fucking time. So I won't say who it is, but Clarence, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
She's having a great fucking time. One of the only reasons I really wanted to watch the show. I was like, you're going to kill off that character? So
I will say most of the cast gets murdered.
That is very true.
So, with the exception of three characters.
Yeah, there is a one point where last night I was watching it, and I mean, this happens in episode 5. This isn't a huge spoiler, but Cynthia Nixon gets shot at one point, and just, you know, involuntarily, I just like, Miranda Hobbs! Like, just really loud in my brain. Like, no! But I don't know. Like, I was like, the trailer was better than the show. I was really disappointed.
I had a feeling it was going to be bad, just because I felt like it didn't capture any kind of spirit of that character. Like, I didn't get that character from Sarah Paulson, and it looked like it was just doing... it should have been American Horror Story Ratched. Like, that's what it looked like to me.
It could have been
that
a movie.
That is exactly what it is.
It could have been a movie. Like, they could have done a TV movie or, like, a feature film, but, like...
Is she can you tell me this? Is she killing people in this?
No. Okay. Well, no. Well,
because I was gonna say
she does.
It's not like she becomes a serial killer.
Okay, because I was gonna say that's not what that character is. I think she's evil, but it's not in that she would never do that. I don't know. I never thought.
I think I'm just confused on, I thought it was sort of going to be this, like, campy, sort of horror-y, which it does a little bit. It's, like, really mysterious. And then it, like, sort of, like, pivots to this, like, kind of, not romantic, but the only word I could think of is, like, romantic, emotional drama to there are lesbians everywhere to, I don't know. Every, like, 5 minutes, anytime somebody popped up on screen, I would just look over at Jason and I would go, lesbians! I don't know. I was just really kind of disappointed.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't...
No.
There's so many problems with it. I mean, I will say, as per usual, the costumes, the production design, as with most Ryan Murphy productions, they are flawless. I mean, the look and the feel of that hospital, with its very carefully chosen, you know, carpets and colors and aesthetic, it works really well. I just, nothing that goes on in this show makes any sense at all, and it really is just kind of garbage.
Well, the funny thing was, I was a little obsessed with how big Hanover's office is in it. Like, I love how it's, like, this, like, wide open space. It's sort of very lushly decorated. Like, maybe not lushly. It's like, you know, meticulously, everything's there for a purpose. And I was like, who did the production design? And I love how, like, all the floors are super, super shiny in the hospital. Like, it looks very sleek and very elegant in a weird way, despite that I hate the color green now more than ever in my entire life. But I was like, who did the production design? I want to know who did the production design. The woman who did the production design for the Boys of the Band did the production for this design.
Oh.
So... I'm going to claim that interview now when it happened. And there's stuff in it that I liked. Like, there's stuff that I was interested in. I don't think I was ever, like, I wasn't bored, but it just felt like, it felt like someone put a camera down for an improv exercise. That's what it felt like the whole time I was watching it. And I don't know. Go watch, if you want to watch something on Netflix that is, like, if you want something, an escapist thing, go watch Emily in Paris, because I watched that in, like, 2 days. Episodes are, like, 25 minutes long, 35 minutes long. It's just fun and stupid, and you can basically call it not a lot of sex in a different city. And there's French guys, and the costumes, and Megan, you're going to be obsessed with the woman who plays Emily's boss in it. I know you are. She's just, like,
I guarantee I will not watch this show. Sorry.
Emily in Paris?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Ratched. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no. The woman who plays the main Lily Collins?
Oh,
Lily
Collins. I can't wait for Emily in Paris. I just haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Yeah. I was going to say, watch that instead. The woman who plays her boss on that show, she's elegant, and she's stunning. I was like, she made me want to be a Parisian woman. She's just elegant and sexy, and I think you'll be obsessed. And I'm obsessed with the costumes in that show. Obsessed.
At some point, I want us to get back together and start looking at Golden Globes, because I don't know that they've, like, I don't know what they're going to nominate. Like, if Ratched doesn't deserve to be up there, but I almost feel like it's going to be, just because there isn't that much else out to nominate for drama series.
They could do something like, I could see them nominating that Luca Guadagnino show because it's from a non-American director. It's set in Italy. I actually feel like the young woman on that, because I'm already compiling a list for my yearly ingenue piece. I feel like, you know, the girl who's in that could probably be on it. I don't know, though. Like, feels like Oscar Golden Globe predictions feel so far away. I don't know.
They do. Well, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that's it.
All right. So let's move off to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating the upcoming week. And who would like to go first?
I will go first. Actually, this is interesting. How Did This Get Made? One of my favorite podcasts is doing a live show on Friday. And they're talking about Cats, the movie. Oh. So I'm going to make myself watch Cats and preparation for, I bought my ticket already. So, I'm really excited about that.
You're going to be terrified.
I know. I'm going to not be able to sleep.
Release the butt cut.
Yeah.
Butt cut. Yeah. When is that? So it's on Friday?
Yes.
Oh, I kind of want to watch it.
That's fun. Joey, what about you?
I think TV-wise, I'm going to try to keep, like, binging stuff, like, pretty hardcore, because I want to catch up on a lot of stuff. But I think the one I'm going to watch first is going to be Fargo, the new season of Fargo. And then I have this new book that I got from someone that I really enjoy on Twitter. His name is Adam Sass. That's his name. It is a young adult book called Surrender Your Sons, about a young man who is sent to a, like, gay conversion island, on a secluded island. His, like, religious zealot of a mother has him kidnapped and shipped off to an island, and I feel like he starts sort of an uprising. And so in the wake of Amy Coney Barrett getting her Supreme Court nomination, I feel like that book is going to have a lot of terrifying relevance.
Yikes.
I'm looking for a new book to read. So let me know if you think it's good.
Okay. When does The Undoing come out? Is that October?
October 25th.
I got a book club!
I mean, I'm not rereading that.
Did you not like it?
No, I mean, I did like it. I just, I've read it recently enough to where I don't need to reread it.
Okay.
Or listen to it recently enough to where I don't need to listen to it again.
Okay.
I think I'm just going to be catching up to a couple of things. I'd like to watch the South Park special that Megan referred to earlier. Vice presidential debate, of course. And
yes, that too.
Yeah, just constantly checking my Twitter. That's like, Megan, I think you liked this, which is why it popped up in my Twitter feed. But somebody said that everybody this weekend was checking Twitter like kids.
Yes, I kids saw you looking like for a that snow day. Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is so dead on. That is exactly what it was like all weekend. I was like, what is going on?
It's so wild.
Yeah.
It was wild. It was a very wild weekend. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think if there was something new that was on this week. I don't think so. So I'll just be catching up. I'm probably starting to watch some scary movies, quote unquote, more Halloween. Let's call them Halloween movies with the kids. Like I think this next weekend we're going to be watching Corpse Bride and have a double feature of Corpse Bride and Coraline.
Aww.
Coraline's really scary. Like really creepy.
It is scary. But yeah, so that's what I'm going to do this week, I think, assuming we make it through the week.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I know.
Big assumption, right?
Yeah.
All right, does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3Ms contributors, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Moy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us, and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow, and thanking all of you for listening to us, and many of you for listening to us for roughly 300 episodes. I can't imagine that somebody's listened to every single one of them, but yeah. So thank you all from each of us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, guys and gals.